additive manufacturing has been changing the way in which people think about manufacturing. And traditional manufacturing is, of course, alive and well. But, however, the additive space will define manufacturing in the future. This morning, three experts on 3D printing from SoCal Office Technologies, a wholly owned subsidiary of Xerox Corporation, will present an overview of the additive marketplace. They will cover current processes, materials, and aerospace applications, as well as look at future potentials. They will also highlight the unique opportunities additive manufacturing brings to the table in the terms of manufacturing and design. Our panelists include Brett Peterson, Nicole Sheff, and Marilyn Hoffman. Brett Peterson is a 3D specialist. He's been in the 3D printing industry for the last 5 years. His time includes management of a 3D service bureau. Prior to this, Brent served as a 3D effects artist as well as an industrial designer, giving him a unique background in covering a wide range of software from solid modelers to digital sculpting applications. Nicole Sheff, managed print specialist, has worked in the technology industry for the past 2.5 years. She has been successful in conducting assessments for companies with several verticals, including aerospace, and in identifying innovative ways to increase efficiency and productivity. Marilyn Hoppe, a senior account executive consultant, specializes in reducing operating expenses while simplifying and enhancing workflow processes. SoCal specializes in document management, managed print services, 3D printing, and office technology. Please join me in welcoming Brett, Nicole, and Marilyn.
And thanks for having us here today. We're really excited to be here and share information. We know that everyone came out today to learn about 3D. So I'm just briefly going to introduce our company to you. And as we said, Brent's our specialist in 3D. So he'll get into most of the presentation on that. I was chatting with some of you. We are a wholly owned subsidiary of Xerox. Xerox realized that they were not really handling the small to medium-sized businesses as well as they should as far as customer service. So they acquired companies like SoCal Office Technologies, and we have 37 sister companies across the country. We carry Xerox equipment, and then you'll hear from Nicole a little bit about some of the other services we provide. And then a couple of years ago, we partnered with 3D Systems. The great thing about SoCal Office Technologies is we have the support of Xerox. However, we have local autonomy to move into other products and services. So a few of the products and services, management services. And one of the things I want to mention here is Nicole really specializes in conducting assessments. Oftentimes for companies, when we conduct those assessments, we're able to find dollars that they can then put into other places in their business. And we've been successful in moving some of those dollars into 3D. So they may have an interest in 3D, but they just didn't know how they were going to finance that. By conducting our assessments, we've been able to locate some dollars and then move them over into the 3D realm. And then, of course, Xerox equipment, office production systems. We also are looking at document software solutions. A lot of companies are trying to go paperless. You've probably heard that term for a long time. We have been successful in helping people. Most of the time, people cannot locate their documents. We say if you can't find it in 5 minutes or less, you need a document management system. So that's another service that we offer. We also are very big in the education world, which has taken us into audiovisual and video conferencing, office equipment and supplies, of course, and network integration services. And then Nicole will take you through this.
Yes. So, as Marilyn mentioned, I'm part of our Vantage Clinic department. So, my department actually goes into companies and conducts what are called assessments. So David's a little bit familiar with this. So this is our way of identifying areas of opportunity. So, for example, within aerospace, it could be something like 3D printing. So in our assessments, we actually physically walk through the facility. We're taking a look at all of your printing devices. So again, that would be copiers. We are a Xerox home company, and we also are partners with HP and Brother. So we're looking at all desktop printers, any manufacturer. And as Marilyn mentioned, we're looking for ways to save money, increase efficiencies. And then we also are looking for, you know, for example, aerospace, going through the walkthrough, seeing the warehouse, seeing what you're manufacturing. We can look for, you know, different opportunities to put equipment in there as far as 3D machines go. Also, again, solutions, document management. So if you're trying to go digital and reduce your printing, that's something that we help with too. So again, this is a way we find dollars to cost justify something like a 3D printer. So now I'll let Brett get into what you guys all came here for. This is the 3D printing portion.
So hopefully, I mean, you get a quick overview of our company and why we're in 3D. You know, obviously we're an office solutions company, so being that we're in a lot of different customers over the years, people started asking about, hey, what's this 3D printer technology? Do you guys do that too? Talking about all this other stuff. So the answer is yes, we do it now, and that's where we brought 3D Systems on board. 3D Systems is the originator of 3D printing back in 1983 by Chuck Hull. The first patent was issued in 1986. SLA, stereolithography, which is basically what 3D printing is in terms of definition. Goes just building five layers additively. They invented the technology. So from there, it spawned out into a whole bunch of different ways to additively build anything. You think about, you know, how loosely the term is thrown around these days. You hear about additively manufactured houses now. That's in the news. Well, what is that? All they're doing is putting down cement layers. Technically, the Hoover Dam was 3D printed. If you're going to use that definition, it's pretty loose. But I mean, its base definition is the same. You're additively building. You're not carving away through traditional means. You're not doing casts. You're not doing any of the standard. You still use all that stuff. Just it's a different way of built up and part. And part of what adds to the confusion is this. We have all these different levels now integrating into 3D printing or additive manufacturing. I'm not beholden to either term, so I'll throw them both around. Additive manufacturing and 3D printing, to me, same thing. 3D printing is a media term. Additive manufacturing is the real term. But they're both out there. Personal printers. There's what I got a friend that all they sell is personal printers, and they have 50 different manufacturers in this space. And that's not printers, that's manufacturers. So the personal space is nuts. It's crazy. It's a wild west. There are so many different ways. And they're all using the same base FDM, FFF, filament, or extruder-based technologies. You're laying down a hot glue of plastic. That's how they work. And it's a very simplified process. Quick and low cost. Even Boeing, they were interested in using these as an enterprise solution. Problem is, they're cheap for a reason. And it's not because they're cheaply made. It's because they require a lot of hands-on and calibration, which you could go to say they're cheaply made, but it's more just developing missiles aren't built into it. They hold their level pretty well once you have them leveled, so they're not unreliable in that sense. It's just getting them there, keeping them there. You have to have some level of tinkering with it, and most companies don't want their engineers tinkering. They want them doing what they're supposed to be doing, not playing with the printers. The professional printer space, that is largely where our company as a Xerox-owned company exists. When you talk to architecture firms, engineering design firms, manufacturing firms, and maybe we'll get to that a little bit. We've been out on some great appointments with people that are doing everything from creating their waxes on site off of molds that they're milling, through the whole cycle, all the way through casting, small little shops, which I'm sure you all you know of these guys down there. They're doing contract work for Boeing and everyone else. Production printers, so professional high color or full color, of course. So this is ceramic, so if I drop this, it'll break. But it's great for doing visual products right off the machine. Doing inspection and having something like a heat map is actually where it's most useful to aerospace and defense, but again, you get a lot of information digitally. So what's the mean there? It's, these aren't sold much of the aerospace and defense. Production printers. Talk about production printers. We talk about functional and material-specific models. So you're outputting parts or prototypes that have some functional ability to them. They're helping you prove an idea, a concept. You know, they might not have full color. You don't need full color. You need it to be nylon. You need it to be 17-4 stainless. You need a specific output from it. That's where production printers sit today. And then, of course, software and scanning. This is becoming more and more important for 3D printing companies, or for companies that utilize 3D printing, as they need to inspect their output. I think the gentleman here is with an inspection, non-destructive, very important right there. I'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment. But scanning is becoming a way in. You know, I've been out to facilities where if they have a missed rivet, for example, on a fuselage, they have to go measure what the dent is. And some of them are really tough to see. We're talking very minor things, but you're buying a million-dollar, multi-million-dollar aircraft. You need to know if there's a dent on it. So the way they inspect it now is they pull it off the line, put it aside, slap clay on it, still today, really. Put clay on it, let it dry, more time, more money. Then do the other side, more time, more money, still off the line the whole time. And then they have to cut the clay in half and measure that. And that's how they perform the report. Giant waste of time. Scanners can scan that same area in and have all that same data digitally with the full report associated with it. And you never have to take it off the line. So, people aren't doing it as much as they should yet, but that's also where the industry is. You know, when we talk about aerospace and defense, they're definitely, especially in metals and the production level equipment, they are the early adopters. They've been proving it out for a good long time.
So, is ultimately your commercial offering your consulting service? Are you selling equipment?
The equipment, maybe. Sorry. Yes. So, we're as a reseller for 3D Systems, we sell the equipment. By way of equipment, it's a consulting process. You know, there's lots of companies that I go out to that don't do any 3D printing. And they say, well, I saw this thing at Lowe's, it was $100. Personal space. You can't do what they want us to do. But they've heard about it and they think it can. Because some of the specs, if you look at them, well, it can do 70 micron layers. That's good enough for what we do. Don't believe marketing. You know, we all work with engineers. Proof is in the pudding. Have them print a part and see how well it holds up to what your specs actually are. I can guarantee you on the personal printer, it's going to fail more often than not. So in the production, you know, again, we get into specialized needs. SLA is really still a prototyping source, although it's also being heavily utilized for real-world tools. Invisalign is the classic example we use. Are you familiar with Invisalign? The way those are made is somebody putting these scans in your mouth, digitally moves the teeth and steps, print them all out at once, and they vacuum-form the Invisalign product to an SLA output. That's how it's made. It's a tool. So in manufacturing, it can be used the same way. If you need to make quick vacuum form studies, molds, foam molds, there's lots of different ways to do it. It can be used to output a tool that is disposable that is still utilized in making a prototype that is real world. So SLA is where, I used to Triumph Aerospace, we spoke with them a little bit. They were more interested in 3D printing as tools. How do I make a jig for this? You scan it and you can 3D print. Very quick and easy versus trying to fit it to whatever it is based on measurements on something that you can't really take off the line and measure. SLS, specialty plastics, we have nylons, we have glass filled, we have aluminum filled, more for weight characteristics than mechanical properties. Some heat tolerance characteristics as well. SLS is, are you familiar with the terms?
How could I have that here? Did you tell us what the vacuum is?
Sorry about that. Yeah. So SLA, stereolithography apparatus, that's why we say SLA. It's basically a vat of resin hit with a laser. The laser is UV, cures the material layer for layer. The part actually sinks into the resin, so you're always hitting the top layer with a laser. But it's liquid-based resin, so things like has to be on the ground floor slab is important for SLA. SLS, this is one that the Navy is actually testing on ship. So SLS is basically powder-based medium. This is an SLA part. This is an SLS part, and you can feel it has a matte finish to it. That's because it was created in a vat of powder. The powder was hit by a laser, melted and fused. That differs very slightly from all these direct metal sintering, direct metal laser sintering, direct metal printing. It's all basically the same idea. Powdered metals hit with a laser, melted and fused, casting on the fly, if you will. There's a lot of direct, and there's a few other direct metals too, and I won't get into all the different types. It's basically ways to do the same thing. There are important property output characteristics for the different technologies offered. We have two printers, the 300 and the 320. The 300 is best in class at making high density parts, so 99% dense parts, which is cast equivalent or better, depending on how you're doing the casting. So this is really important for aerospace. You know, 99% density is getting to the range where they use it as real-world parts, which is what they're testing now. The ProX320 used to be a company called Bearwise. They were purchased by 3D Systems. They've made over 500,000 titanium parts on this machine. Well proven in the industry. If you have a customer that's into titaniums, this is the machine for that. I can prove out in pretty much any titanium that they would want to use. Here's your data sheet. Knock yourself out. Engineers look over it. Yes, check. All right, give me one. Yeah.
Which one of those provides for proper grain flow direction?
So that's a question. I would say, realistically, none right now. Grain flow, you can't control grain flow in a vat of powder. Currently with the existing machines. There's no way to do it because of the way it sieves it and puts it all in there. So grain flow, yeah, it's a question mark, which is where, I'm sorry, what's your name again?
Andre.
This company, I mean, when you start doing a non-destructive inspection or even destructive inspection, that's what they're looking for and that's what they're proving you now. Now, layer compaction is a big piece of that. It's not grain flow, I get that. But, you know, grain flow is tough because of the way that the powder is delivered to the machine. I don't see an easy solution for it, but again, I'm not the one building the machines. I just, knowing them and how they work, I don't know how you're going to do that. Magnetically, perhaps, but again, you're dealing with magnetic metals and that causes other problems as far as laser printing or laser fusing goes. But that's why this aerospace industry is, they're very old. So I called the aerospace and defense industry early adopters, right? It's partially true. In plastics and prototyping, they're ending. And I'm speaking of the larger scale of the Boeings, the SpaceXs, not the mom and pop shops or even the larger shops like Capco, Rockwell Collins. They're really parts producers for Boeing, Airbus, what have you. I'm not talking about those guys. I'm talking about the originators of the technology and the equipment, Boeings. I'll use them as an example. they've been using prototyping for years. Years and years and years. Metals is new. And the reason metals is new is now we're at a stage with the 300 printer. If we can do 99% density parts, that's a viable part, in theory. You know, obviously all this needs to be proven out, right? That's what's happening. So GE is proving it out. Rockwell Collins is looking at it. Because they're one of the companies that is more thoughtful towards the end game. They know it's coming. They don't see a need for it today. Absolutely not. And they're not willing to step outside the box and say, I can make a better part for you, Boeing. You gave me this spec, I can make it like this and it's going to be better. No. They're here for contracts. Boeing said make it this way, they're going to make it this way. That's the end of it. I think this is just kind of where these spaces, I'll look through this one quickly. Little stuff. Education, hobbies, desktop, professionals, secondary designers and engineers. Prototyping, not parts. There's a distinction I'm going to make always, is prototyping versus parts. So, when we look at the industry applications, and this I will ask you to pass down. This came out from it's a month or two old now. It's got some really nice information in it. I don't necessarily agree with everything in it, but it's a great starting point. I got extras if you're short. And it really does a decent job with some of the graphs. All these graphs that I took in here, they're in here as well. So this is kind of a take home for you to read over. Having things to read every now and then. It's not a digital thing. But the current applications, commercial, aerospace, and defense, you know, get concept modeling and prototyping, they've been doing it for a while. Printing low-volume complex aerospace parts, exploring, looking at how do I make an exhaust manifold, that's what that means. Printing replacement parts. Current applications, I would say no. This is wrong. They're not, certainly not commercial aerospace. They are not making replacement parts with 3D printers yet. Will they? Sure. Not today. Why? No FAA approval. You can't just go change a part and print it because you feel like it. So it was proven out and approved by the FAA in this way. You can only make it in this way, right? So this is wrong. Get that. Space, printing specialized pipes for space, yes. Printing structures using lightweight, high-strength materials, growing, I would say. Printing parts with minimal waste, well, that's 3D printing. You know, that's kind of the whole thing. We're out of it. We're not. Our waste is minimal. The exhaust manifold there uses no supports. It's supported by the bed of powder exploding in. Metals, still bed of powder, but metals are heavy. They're dense. They need supports. But still, the supports are minimal compared to moving away from a larger block of anything. You know, if you talk about Aerojet Rocketdyne, they just printed a platinum, a platinum nickel alloy engine. You know how much that block of that's going to cost? And then you have to deal with all the waste, and you're going to lose some of it, inevitably. With 3D printing, it's almost all built. Potential applications, not even close. Printing aircraft wings, nope, not even close. We don't have the printers the right size, not big enough. Printing complex engine parts, that's starting to happen. You know, if GE sleep engines is a good example of that. The fuel injector nozzle, why is that an important thing? Because they're taking advantage of fuel dynamics that are being allowable by 3D printing. They're able to make a part with internal cavities and structures. So that's happening now. Printing repair on the battlefield. Like I said, the Navy's got an SLS machine. I don't know which it's on a carrier. I don't know which one. This is happening too. First thing. Printing on-demand parts in space. I do have it. I don't have that part that was printed in space, but I have the file that was used to print in space. So this is a ratcheting, one build ratcheting one-billed ratchet wrench. And it was emailed to the space station and imprinted there to be used there. So that's the idea behind space. Space is awesome when it comes to 3D printing, because especially if you start talking about Mars and colonization, what can we do? We can scoop up powder and reconstitute it in any shape we want based on the principles of 3D printing. So it's a big deal now.
So there are no PMA parts today being made via Netter?
PMA
on the replacement side and
in military applications, yes. Commercial, no. None that I'm aware of. Actually, I take that back. There might be a few, but they were additively manufactured in the first place. So replacement parts were additively manufactured parts. Another company, Capco, this is their interest. And they're willing to even explore the opportunity to maybe go and recertify some parts that are just a pain for them. You know, and then they can just print them. So it's in discussion, but it's, you know, again, it's the commercial that I focus on there. It's a tricky thing.
So is there a challenge in space with gravity when we're doing that?
No, yeah. Well, it depends on the technology. With FDM, which is what that wrench was made with, it's nozzle plate. I mean, even down here on Earth, with gravity, I can turn the printer upside down and it'll still do its thing. Because it's direct contact. Powders, yes. So planetary, better. Space station, bad. Right? So the powders and lasers and that sort of thing. Plus, powders, lasers, inner spaces, do you really want to put them on the space station? It's a risk. Such as oxygen being, you know, up there. And you know, the main thing with the laser 3D printers in the metal space is inerting the chamber. Bad. Well, it's bad for parts too. But you hit powder with a laser and oxygen, there you go. So, yeah, it's we're relegated to that in terms of zero gravity for now. Yeah, I can't think of the. I mean, I'm sure there's people working on it, but I don't know how you would pull that off. But printing structures using lightweight, high-strength material, there's actually a really cool one I saw that actually prints outside of the space station in true space, so, or orbital space. You actually can extrude an arm of a satellite floating. So it's attached to a base and it's got an arm and it just kind of grows it out. And your limit on size then? Whatever you want. You can build anything. Materials are what's going to cost you. Do you have the right material for that application environment? How do you heat it up and squirt it out so it doesn't freeze? See, these are also from there. Major cost factors to in-house printing. Part cost down. Maybe. You know, that's really if you're outsourcing parts. If you're sending out a bunch of parts, yes, you can save money. If you're not, you're going to be spending money. And the goal there with companies is you're spending money to make more money. You know, it's not a cost savings, it's a growth. You're growing the business. Scrap down, yes, we talked about that one. Time to market, this is huge. You know, if I have a part that takes me 6 weeks to get, and I can print it and have it tomorrow and test it, I don't really care if it's the end-use material, because my engineers can tell me what the end-use material is supposed to do. I can test the part, see if it works, see if there's any inconsistencies with the part. Are those inconsistencies material-based, or are they geometry-based? My engineers can tell me. And I can have the part tomorrow. While I'm waiting for the part to get here 6 weeks from now, or not ever send it over there until I'm ready. And that's really what happens 9 times out of 10. You're allowed to fail faster. That's one of the phrases that we use a lot. You find the error, you find the flaws, you find it this week, not 6 weeks down the road. Part way cost down, this is becoming huge. My software side, so I use a ton of different softwares. Autodesk is one of the newer, not newer softwares, but they've newly released the ability to build biometric or biomimic parts based on traditional shapes. So you start off with an L-shaped bracket that weighs 100 pounds. You can put it into their software, and it will grow. It kind of looks like bone marrow. Have you seen these parts?
Actually, I have a picture right here.
Funky stuff like this. This part is a 40% weight savings of the original part. It's huge for aerospace, especially space. If you're sending stuff up, I forget what the number is. It's 100,000 per kilo or something like that. I think that's the magic number. So if you're saving, you know, a couple pounds, you save $100,000. It's a big deal. So being, and do know that this part is structurally equal or better than the original part. So you're creating better parts. They're not faster than the traditional method. They're just better. So that's where aerospace is really looking at, especially space exploration stuff. Because they're all about weight. Weight is their number one. Strength is important. You know, they're assuming no loss in strength. So that has to stay, remain steady. But if you can save the weight and keep that strength, you better believe that's an important factor for them. So these, and it goes a little more into, you know, this is in here there too. I'm gonna let you read that one. It's basically talking about where repetitive manufacturing impacts. So on demand manufacturing, yeah, huge impact on supply chains. Again, we're not there. You know, because a lot of the parts, especially with, you know, we don't have FAA approval on stuff. So until we do, this is really irrelevant. And again, military defense, they can get away with those things. They don't care about things like toxicity requirements on materials. They care if it catches on fire, but they don't care if the smoke is toxic. Because if you're flying it on a F-16, well, by the time that kind of smoke is happening, if you can't shut it down quickly, they're out of there, right? So the FAA is not governing those. Manufacturing complex designs, yes. So again, when you think about this part I could not make a few years ago in terms of being able to install it and use it. And this is again where I differ a little bit from the study, but there's great information here. They essentially break it down into four key areas. It's really three areas that lead to the fourth. I'll let you read this because I think this describes it a little bit better. So, prototyping and lead time reduction. It's huge. That's what people are using it for today. That's the easy buy-in. We get it. We're going to get things faster. We're going to be able to prototype better, quicker. Innovation of design is usually the next step. Once people have this printer, they realize, hey, I can do this. The engineers start saying, hey, I can make this part now. Let's try that and see if it works. They're allowed to explore options because it doesn't cost them, in terms of time or money, that much. You know, you're not paying $10,000 to have somebody go build it out for you. You're paying maybe $200 in material costs here. And by the way, you can have it within a week versus within, you know, a couple months. So they're allowed to explore and develop options because they have a printer. Now, there are some people that can jump in at any stage of this, but this is kind of the tradition. This is how it's going now. Innovation and design leads to supply chain systems based on the growth of part approval. The more parts that are approved by the FAA, especially in commercial, the more people will start using it in their supply chain. So then you're doing all of these things, and that's their step four in the last slide. you know, you're changing, you know, how the marketplace is working. And then the more you get into this, the more units people start exploring as well. So we're seeing this too. So if you have somebody that's starting to do this, odds are they already have a printer, they're looking to add a second one with greater capabilities into their fleet. And again, if you go to supply chain, well, yeah, of course you're going to need more printers then. Because this one doesn't stop doing what it's doing, and this one doesn't stop doing what it's doing. You need another one that comes in and starts fulfilling supply orders. So that's where, you know, you really start seeing, or you're welcome, multiple use part machines at a facility location. So when you talk about Boeing, and again, I'm talking about the company, I'm not talking about branches. Because if you go to branches of Boeing, there's some that barely know what 3D printers are. Boeing is a company, they're starting to edge over to here. Because they're starting to have parts approved in the house as to usability in commercial and military applications. This is where we're getting into questions. But before we do, all of these companies are either owning, and I'm speaking of metal machines here, they either own metal machines or are heavily testing metal machines and getting parts approved for use today. Aerojet Rocketdyne, and the big question that people have is, you know, what does testing mean? So there's two sides to the testing. One is, can I take off the machine, part off the machine, and run it, and will it work? That's what's happening for all of us. The new piece of the puzzle is inspection. How do you verify if you give it to your supplier down the street, assuming he has a machine, that he's going to make the same part in the same way that they originally made? So Aerojet just signed a contract doing inspections, non-destructive. And actually, are you doing any inspections for additive right now?
Okay.
So, what they're doing is, it's funny because we were spitballing about this the other day. How do you do this? Well, you just inspect every layer as it's being built. Lo and behold, they just signed on for a company that's going to inspect every layer as it's being built. You know, so they're videoing it, and they're looking for inconsistencies in build patterns. Now, is that the be-all, end-all? No, because you can't metallurgically go into the layer, you know, the 25th layer and take a sample from the center. You know, even, you know, I don't know how well X-ray or whatever methods you happen to use, I don't know as much about it, but it is an important piece of the puzzle. You know, how do you prove that the interior parts that you built, one are there? Well, and that's where the video, every single layer comes in. Because if you see it growing, you can see it building in it there. How do you prove that those inner parts are mechanically equal to the exterior parts? That's still a big question. So we don't know, and that's, you know, probably gentlemen like yourself to figure out for us. So I am not an expert in that. I can't tell you how to look on the inside of another part. Yeah.
I would imagine that you can do through a SolidWorks or software of that nature, if you're using a particular model and the printer prints exactly what the model says. If there are softwares out there that can calculate the stresses, et cetera, that can simulate it quite accurately as to what the performance of the part will be.
To a degree, yes, but do keep in mind that there's Arkham EOS 3D Systems, which is actually comprised of two printer companies that they purchased, one Phoenix Systems, one LayerWise. They're all under the Phoenix and LayerWise are under the 3D Systems umbrella. All four of those printers have subtle differences in how they build parts. EOS is one of the ones that's been around for the longest. EOS is also the machines that were, the problem of being around the longest, and we have the same problem with SLA, is the original parts off of it, engineers scoffed at because they weren't mechanically accurate to what they wanted. They were just, I mean, it was early stage. You know, yes, there was a lot of kinks to work through and build properly compacted parts. You know, Phoenix is better than LayerWise, and those are both migrators, right? Phoenix is better at compaction than LayerWise. LayerWise is proven out to the nth degree on titanium. So, yes, SolidWorks might be able to spit out a number, but the physical inspection side is, no one's going to move forward without it, because the printers all work a little differently. And that's where it comes into the play, where if Boeing says, we've proven this out with a EOS, my competition, you have to use this, then they'll have it there. I can't sell them any of our machines, because Boeing said, you have to buy this machine and do it this way.
Do you see the industry going that way? Just dictating what...
In the short term, it's going to have to be. Right? It has to be. Because that's, you know, the way that they... You know, and with the FAA and the inspectors, much like banks, they don't know what this additive manufacturing stuff is. You know, we were having a conversation earlier. You know, 2 years ago, to get a fair market value finance, it was impossible. You make sure, like, what is this guy? I'll give you a dollar buyout, but I'm not going to give you a fair market value. It happened all the time. That's changing. It is the same thing. They're like, well, we can't prove this part. You know, we're not going to let this fly. You know, and you can't use that machine over there because this machine is the one that's proven on. And even though those machines, my machine might be better, but if the FAA approved it on this machine using this method and this slicing mechanic and this post-processing off of this machine, the customer is going to be beholden to that machine. So it's weird in that space, in the future, and that's where the future comes into play, right? You know, 10 years time from now, maybe 5, you know, if we fast track things, they start figuring out, okay, this method, this machine just really doesn't work. You know, and that's where these guys are coming to play. They're testing all these machines.
I have a feeling this is going to be a case like the Alpha Set. You remember the Alpha Set?
I don't.
That's my point. It was better technology than A-Track. He had a bad marketing program.
Beta VHS, I can talk about that. That was the same idea, right?
I remember that. That was before that.
Beta was better and VHS.
Beta was
better. Yeah. But, I mean, that's where we're proving things out. The best technology might not win until tomorrow. But I think with aerospace, and you know, because of the stresses and requirements, the pretenders, I don't want that. I don't have the right word for it. The people that can't hold up on the part side, the outputting of usable parts, it's going to become apparent. You know, and also keep in mind that not every metal has been tested yet. You know, copper is 2 years old in terms of being able to be made at all on a metal printer. So, you know, yes, NASA just produced a thruster engine with cooling channels built into the side of it, out of copper. 2 years old. You know, so it's moving very fast because the machines now can output parts of suitable compaction and density. Now the testing comes into play. How can I do this metal? The platinum nickel alloy that Aerojet did had never been done before, and that's about a year old. You know, so when we start talking about, you know, the different flow patterns and how that's all going to work, you know, that's a question mark too. It might not. So the parts being made now, it doesn't matter yet. Sure, it would be better, but it doesn't particularly matter to how the parts are being outputted and manufactured today. You know, once that becomes available, yeah, people will adopt it quickly. Because they're already proving out this, they're like, well, we just need a better machine. Buy that machine. We can still use the machine for this part, that part, this machine will be for this part. So it's based on stresses. Yeah.
You mentioned earlier in the conversation that people were using it for tooling, for example.
Yeah.
Now, are those always throwaway situations, or are they?
Depends on the printer you have, really, and the application, I suppose. So if I can make a part out of nylon, you know, how long is that going to last me based on the stresses that I'm putting that tool under? I last forever, you know, under certain circumstances, but it just it depends on the machine they have. A lot of people use the filament printers for tooling. That's fine if you don't care about all three axes. They have a weakness on Z. That's where the layers are laid down. if I take that part, I built that part specifically as it lays, because if I built it the other way, I could take it, snap it in half, because there's a weakness on Z. The layers wouldn't, they don't stick as well on Z as a single piece laid down all at one time. The stress is there. Yeah.
This is cool for plastic as well for metal, or
To a degree, yes. The Z axis, it depends on the machine. So, you know, caveat there. Some machines, they're homogeneous on X, Y, and Z. SLA is that way. I can't say that the metals or powders are 100% homogeneous on X, Y, and Z, but they're really close. And certainly really close in engineering is sometimes it's not close enough. You know, I always think about General Atomics. I was talks with them. Say, well, we need you to print a micron resolution. You and everybody else. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't exist. Well, it does now, but you know, you can actually build. There's crazy stuff if you look at the. But it's more research front items now. Most people don't need that micron resolution. Is the point. They're looking at it from. They needed an edge that was on a ring that sit on a PG. So I don't know. So it's still being developed that way. So it's, you know, non-destructive inspection is going to be huge. Everyone's going to need it. They're proving out the parts now. You guys come in when they need to prove it at every shop that they go to. Everybody that buys a machine needs to prove it back to the phone. How are they going to do that? You're going to be busy. Yeah, but you're hugely important to the rest of us too, because without that prove out and consistency and understanding, all these guys stop doing what they're doing and they go back to the tradition. I don't think it's good. But you know, the potential is there that they just, you know, if you can't figure out how to inspect 3D printed parts wholly, internally, externally, and all the way around, you know, we're gonna have a tough time ever getting things into commercial. But we'll see what happens.
What's your expectation in terms of the eventuality of commercial? Is that 20 years away, 30 years away?
You know, as quick as things are going, it could be. I mean, there's already parts flying, non-commercial things. They're non-critical parts, things like dots. Our competitor has a material that's really meets fire tolerance and toxicity requirements required by the FAA. So they're using it. I think I read an article. Airbus is doing in the scope of tons of parts every day.
Wow,
being output. So what does that mean? How many are flying? I don't know.
Can you share with us a little bit about the future of 3D printing? By that, I mean, I know that the existing equipment are by milling and CNC manufacturing comparisons, they're slow.
Yes.
Okay. You can actually machine a CNC mill apart probably in a quarter of the time that you can print it. But I know that the technology is changing, so how far are we before that changes and it's the other way around?
So there's two parts. Machine activity time. Currently, CNC smokes everything. It's the fastest way to do stuff. Setup time and preparation time on the CNC is much higher than a printer. A printer I put on the plate, I hit go, and it spits it out. My operator time is in the tune of, you know, 10-15 minutes. You know, whereas hour to hours, depending on the CNC part. So that's a factor. So on some parts, like the Invisalign parts, 3D printing smokes traditional manufacturing. Not even close. They can't do it as fast as we can do it. Because we can do, you know, a set of 52 teeth all at one time in about an hour and a half. So you can't touch it. So it depends on the parts. You have to factor in operator time, pure machine time, though. So that's the root of your question there. Pure machine time
And I'm really more interested in metal, really, because that's really the for aerospace, that's the key, and as opposed to plastics.
It's, metal is going to, you know, somebody has to invent new technology is what it comes down to really speed it up. How quickly can you lay down layers in the resolution you want, which is very, very fine, and have a off-machine ready part, you know? The more resolution, the more layers, generally the slower the time, you're not going to change the fact that you have to heat up power to a molten to make it stick to the other powers. So how do you speed that up? Higher layer power laser? That's not necessarily a good idea either. More layers at once, again, that can cause problems. How do you do it, you know, in terms of metals? You know, certainly there's little things and tweaks you can make, understanding parts, but that has nothing to do with building a part. If I'm building a cube, that doesn't help you. There's no orientation that can speed up a cube. They're always going to be stuck. So, I don't know, you know, is the answer there. Boeing filed a patent for 3D printing floating parts. All right. So they're going to use, you know, a super cool, what's it called? Kind of like the hoverboard that they did, conductor for. Basically, they float apart over space, and they have stuff on all sides, and they all are supposed to come in and build this thing while it's floating. I don't know. How's that going to work? It's a cool idea, but my understanding is if something's floating and you hit it over here, it starts to spin. So you're going to have perfectly offsetting, I don't know. That's new technology. They filed a patent for it. It probably won't go anywhere. I don't know. Maybe it will. But that's the future. Things like our DLP technology, plastics. So the big limitation in plastics, I don't want to talk about it, but it kind of illustrates the point. Sandwiches a layer of resin against the plastic, cures it from the bottom, lifts it up, so pulls it off the plastic, sandwiches back down. That's the old way of DLP tech. The new way, digital light projection, this thing, is a DLP printer. It's really what's in most of them. Black doesn't cure, white cures. That's how it works. So it's doing that layer by layer, white cures, black doesn't. Well, now what it does, there's a new company, it's called Clip. It floats a layer of oxygen in there. So plastic, layer of oxygen, liquid material that the part that the grow bed. So the laser's coming through, hitting the grow bed here. Well, there's no separate and release anymore. There's just grow and laser. So it's pulling it up. It's just, it can constantly pull instead of going pull, drop, double the speed. So that's a new technology that's out in the last year or two. I don't think the printer's even out yet, and it might still be kickstarting it. Perhaps it's the entry level too, but it'll go to big if they can figure out there's other issues. We can get in there, go down the rabbit hole there. But the new technology stuff, especially with metals, that's where it's going to have to come to. But material sciences is also, you know, for a long time, material sciences was this. Now it's this. So the material's coming out. Where's that? And whatever that means, the drill. You know this? 2 years ago, pieces all over the place. So material sciences has come a very long way in a very short time, and that's where really the future of all 3D printing lies is material sciences. You know, and the printers that can handle it, this is a resin, has a limitation. Resin cured by a laser. Cured, not melted. Limitation of this is plastic melted infused with a laser. Metal, same idea. What material fits into which limitation, which box? I don't know, we'll see. You know, that's kind of the fun part of what the future holds. The good news is we can make parts that are ready to use right now, today. The faster I think we'll come with material sciences, that's my guess. It's a good guess. But we'll see. Or new technologies that none of us have even heard of.
Sorry to diverge completely away from aerospace and defense. I thought you might have some insight. I've read that There's been a lot of advances in the biomedical 3D printing field.
Again, material sciences is what I'm driving it. And they actually use the filament-based printers, because the filament-based printers, again, they're hot glue guns. So you're basically pumping a material through a nozzle and laying it down. That's exactly what they're doing. The nozzle, you either want it or don't, is really just a disingenuous pen that they're drawing with. They're worried about sterilization, build times, and suitability of materials, and all this other stuff. That's like the liver they're growing. Right. They're growing livers, they're growing kidneys. I think they have a working kidney that was fully 3D printed prosthetics. Stem cells and that. Small little, laboratory stuff. But we're talking 5-10 years from now.
Rather than sit on the organ.
Let me take some stem cells, we'll grow you one. Yeah.
That's suited for your body.
Yeah. That's happening very quickly. If you pay attention to biomedical fields, they're growing crazy fast, and there's printers that are going to come out there that we've never seen. That's just a matter of time there.
Yeah. Let me throw a sad commentary to that. They can actually print tumors. So they can, once they know what kind of tumor you have, they provide a scan. There are systems out there to scan it, and you can send it to a printer, and you can actually print and have a 3D print of whatever tumor you have, and doctors can then slice it and dice it and try to figure out how to properly do surgery on it. Stuff like that.
Yeah, this is another important piece to the biomedical. This is another part, titanium. The matrix here, so it has an internal lattice work as well. So what's happening with this stuff, this is, go back to my anthropology degree. Not completely useless. Basically what happens there is this matrix, they infuse it with stem cells, and the bone will actually grow into this part. So you actually have titanium bone infused with titanium by the time you're done. So that's brought forth by metal printing, and that's being done today. So, and the important thing there is, everybody kind of poo-pooed the fact, if you needed a new cranial plate due to an injury or accident or whatever, the idea of 3D printing was absurd to a lot of people. Because you can't just put a metal plate there. They have in the past, they did. The problem is there's no flex to it. So if it gets hit, it's like resonating with the rest of the bone, and it's just not good. Well, if you can build it like this, it's very lightweight, and yeah, you have to take your time and make sure it grows, but once it grows in, it's bone more than it is plate. So now you don't have that same problem of the resin being it with a hammer. You being with a hammer, you shatter bone. With the new stuff, with the old stuff, it's like a bell, right? So, biomedical is really fun. It's crazy. And that's where, if you ever look at micron 3D printing, do a Google search, you'll see there's a race car, like a Formula One race car that's 6 microns long. And it has the wheels and the scoops and 6 microns. Are you kidding me? It's a blue ion something like that. But it's been around for 4 or 5 years now. So I can't even imagine the stuff they're doing there behind closed doors.
So is tolerance more difficult on smaller or larger?
Yes.
Or is there a more a popular envelope that most 3D printers are?
All of that. Yeah,
all of that.
So X and Y on these guys is pretty, on the filament based printers, pretty sloppy. The Z is pretty good. We start talking about the powder based, our metal printers, we can hit 20 microns in X, Y, and Z in terms of repeatability. So we get the first print, might be a little off, and then we have to go and dial it in a little bit. Once it's dialed in, it can stay down. And we can consistently reproduce parts in that range. Same thing is true of different technologies. Some are bigger. Actually, that was what I was going to go into with the oxygen drone layers. There's a problem with size in that technology and part warping and how, because it's not secured to a plate and it's floating on oxygen, how big a part can you do before the plastics, material science, start bending? That's the limitation. In Vision Tech, they're the biggest, they're kind of
I'd say they are the stronghold for GLP. They use it, that's what they sell, that's what they have. They make great parts, but they have limitations on what they can and can't do. They do really well in this scope. Mm-hmm. When they start getting really big, it gets a little tougher before. They can handle it, and there's ways to do it, but it's through support mechanics and post-processing.
So do you perceive the size of 3D printers getting larger over time? Or
sure.
To handle larger parts, like if they're able to dial it in better?
If you look, there are some out there that can do some very large parts. I think the biggest part I've seen is about the size of four of these tickets. One, two, three, four. It's really ugly though. There's a ton of post process done on it. And they're putting it down in these really thick, fat layers. So what's the density mass? You know, how's that work structurally? You're bringing in a limitation that I don't have in the powder base, but I deal with a smaller volume too. So what's important? There it's more of saving money up front in terms of not wasting material, but they still have to mill the bejesus out of it. You know, it's an ugly, ugly one. And every part you see, it looks like a CNC part by the time it's done. Because you see the marks all over it. So, again, and that's where aerospace in the future, the wings, that one seems really far-fetched for now. New technology is going to have to push us there. Because right now, partitions, and that's actually Airbus, they talk about that a lot, all those partition walls, that'll be one of their first things into it, because they're really, if they're structurally sound, they don't have a lot of other stress requirements to them. They have to hold, if the plane's going this way and the stewardess falls on top of it, that's what they're helping. Aside from firewalls. But,
flooded.
I'm trying to think about that stuff.
Yeah, right. Yeah, the visual is.
Yeah. But that's what this is talking about. This part actually has I forget what this is exactly. But all these, this was fully built. It has full internal beyond. This is a really common part. Anybody that has to deal with this part can tell you they are a pain to do. A lot of setup, a lot of finishing, a lot of work. Growing them is actually really easy. And the sandblast, get the polish we want. It's super common to see those CNC all the time. But people that have the metals, put it on this one, get a button. Because all you have to do at the base of it, that metal part, it prints on a solid metal plate, and then you just EDM the part right off the plate. EDM wire gun. Or bandsaw. A lot of companies can. And that's really where, when you start looking at future manufacturing potential using a 3D printer, the people that are into plastics, they're not really a client and the main reason for it is they don't have any of the back end. You still need to mill to do all your finishing. You need an EVM or a bandsaw and understanding how to cut the metal. You still need all those back end tools. If you don't have those, you're going to get a 3D metal printer and then what? Well, you got to outsource it to somebody that has all those tools. So really, are you the best fit for that? My best fit is the people doing traditional manufacturing today. It's easy to run a 3D printer. Put it in a file, and you get all the training that you need for it. Take your file, this is how you put it in there, this is how you hit the button, it comes out over there. Really, how much training is involved? You already know most of what you need to know if you're in the metals industry already. If you know something, how to do it. The stress tolerances of different metals. You know what it should perform like once it comes out done, and you have something you can test against. Plastics people, they don't have any of that. Yet they're the ones looking to add metal printers to their service bureaus, but their service bureaus are set up for plastics. It's not the same. Not even close. And all the manufacturing people that think that we're going to take their jobs without a manufacturing, you're the future of it. You're the ones I need to buy them, because without you, it dies. This is your future revenue potential. And a lot of them, especially the small ones, we can talk about them. if somebody comes in and says, I need one of these, as a tooling shop, how much are you going to charge somebody for one of these? $35,000. Because you have to do all the tooling and setup and everything else that goes with it. Or, and that customer's gone. They're not going to pay $5,000 for one. It's not. If you can say, okay, you know, I'll charge you $500 for it. By the way, it costs me $20. They're going to say, great, when can I have it?
Tomorrow.
Right?
Well, that $20 cost, though, does that include the amortization of the equipment?
No. It's a good point. But if they're starting to bring in a lot of those little customers, well, guess what happens if you make one of these parts? They go, test it. Great, that works. I need $5,000. Boom. Now you have an investor. You know, investor folks with you. You know, somebody comes, I proved out this part, it works on this thing, here's all the mechanical specs on it, I need funding to make 10,000 of them, these are my customer base. That's a pretty, it's an easier loan to give than here's this plastic one I've made, I want to make it in metal. So that's where the future of these little shops, they're missing a big piece of it because they're turning more customers to this all the time. Or they have big customers that say, hey, remember that part you made for me? I need one more of those.
So you think there is a lot of potential customers who visit the small shop and ask for a sample that the small shop turned away?
I don't know the exact size of it, but it is a piece of it and it's something they should consider because I guarantee you any small shop you talk to, they turn people away. Why do they turn people away? Well, that's, you know, up for debate, of course. But it's one of the reasons that they can start using it today, even though Boeing doesn't need it yet. You know, and that's kind of the tie-in I bring to these guys. It's like, listen, you can learn how to use this today, make parts that Boeing's already proving out today, and be ready when they call you and say, hey, do you have additive capabilities? I mean, that's where we are with the small shops and on all the job shops, and there's hundreds of them. And they're all, if they're going to stay a supplier for Boeing or Airbus or SpaceX or whoever, they're going to have additive because they're going that way. And if you ask to make a part that looks like this, they just can't make it. And it's an unbuildable part. This is an unbuildable part for traditional manufacturing. It can only be additive to manufacturing. So medical space, again, all these little job shops, they can start getting into medical space here, which are important, too. So, and they know how to polish this and do everything else back that they would need to do. Actually, with titanium, I think you need to polish it because it's a better bone appearance.
Well, that is interesting. In a way, it's kind of a perfect sense of Boeing because they're expecting suppliers to be in the heat.
Yeah.
And that allows the perfect transition to the real thing.
Yeah. They just need to buy into it. The suppliers do.
What's the biggest challenge to accepting this new technology from suppliers?
Monetary. It's a big deal as well. I mean, my cheapest printer is a print volume about yay big. That's $350,000.
Wow.
The 10x10 inch volume is sitting around $850 to $1 million. You know, that's a lot of volume that they're going to have to get into. But, you know, at the same token, they go and buy a new CNC machine for $500,000.
Millions.
Yeah. It just depends on the size and the complexity. So they're already spending that money, but it's a proven ROI on the mill. Right? They already know that if I add this, this customer is going to come here to do this. If they add additive, they really have to be paying attention. Because additive is moving fast, and they're going to be asked if they have it, and if they don't, it's going to be somewhere else. So, you need to have a company, and the little guys aren't going to immediately jump into it. It's just, you know, it's too much of a risk. But the medium-sized companies, the Capcos, the Rockwell Collins, the major suppliers for aerospace, they just need to, you know, again, 2 years ago, we weren't here where we are today. You know, this crazy list. I mean, there's not too many people missing off this list as far as primary designers of components. I don't even call Boeing a manufacturer, they're an assembler, right? They just don't manufacture. But you look at these guys, you know, these guys make guns. Helicopter. Engines. I don't know if they're a cool thing, but they have a component that's the top of the rotary fixture for the printing. Someone's flying. But, you know, you start thinking about the complexity of that part. It's crazy.
So the most amazing application that I ever saw is that I went on the tour of Edwards Air Force Base, and we're going through their machine shop. And they were showing us an example of, on, I think it was the F-16, I'm not sure, of these, you know, they were rubber or plastic caps that were orange in color, and they went over, like, where two electrical components went together, and I guess they had three or four that were cracking or wearing out or whatever. They contacted the manufacturer to get replacement parts, and they told them, okay, we can send you a minimum order of so many in 6 weeks. Well, they said, well, forget that. We're just going to pull off one that, a good part off of one, and we're going to reverse engineer it. We're going to program our 3D printer, and we're going to print out the ones we need, and we're going to stick them off, and we're going to be back up in the air. And we're still going to order those to have them on, you know, our backup, because we realize we're going to need it. Other ones are going to wear out. But I was truly amazed that here you have the military is adopting this.
Yeah, I had a similar story. It was at a trade show. Four-star general comes up to me and basically starts laying into me. These are those damn things that print guns. He used more colorful language than that. Right. Plus, I mean, some lowly civilian looking with you, and a sales guy for that too. You know, the scum of the earth, according to him. But what we started talking about, I'm like, well,
you didn't get too many arguments for anyone around here, you know.
I'm laying low here. But the conversation we had is, I'm like, well, let me ask you this: if you need a parts in Afghanistan, how do you get it? And he said, well, we're going to send it out there. I'm like, how long is it? 6-8 weeks, whatever it is. You know, if we do it fast, we can get it there, you know, maybe within 3 or 4 days. I'm like, what if you emailed it to your guys and they could print it? It completely, you want it. He's like, we could have these in every deployment. Yes. What materials can they do? Start telling materials. He's like, wow, this will solve so many of our problems. And he but he got it, and that's kind of the same story. It's, you know, is it for long term usage? No, it's a band aid for them, at least today, for them to make a part they can quickly use that will solve their problem while they wait for the other things, the real ones, to get there. You know, even a plastic part will last in lieu of a metal part if designed correctly and under the right application for a short term. So he got it. He understands it. He walked away not angry at me anymore. It's always good. I'm not that four-star general angry at you. And I made him angry at the guy who printed the gun. So let that guy take all the heat. Because certainly, you know, it's my advice to canned responses. Well, you've been able to CNC guns for, you know, 40, 50 years, so really, I don't think manufacturing a gun in a garage is anything new. That's right. Plastic, perhaps, but
from the beginning of time.
Yeah, they carve them out of wood and slap on some iron that they cast. I mean, come on. You can do that in your crops. Still don't price it. I had to learn some legal bits behind it now. We can talk about it, but
But any other? This piece that I gave you here, this is the one that we've developed to help customers understand 3D printing. Because believe it or not, you probably believe it. More people I talk to than not still don't even know that there's more than one way to 3D print anything, let alone what 3D printing really is. All these things over on this side, those are all the different ways to 3D print now. Now there's a couple missing. They're talking about ultrasonic printers. Now that's a whole other thing that we can do new technology stuff. But these are the base. These are the commons. And with 3D systems, we offer machines that represent all of those. So that's on the other side. Kind of a quick high-level overview of everything that we offer, where it fits into the different technologies. This is really most of them. These are the mainstreams. And then on the back side is, when we talk to customers about, are you doing 3D printing and why not? This is how we qualify them, really, is what it comes down to, whether they're ready to adopt or not. There's a lot that aren't. And this spells it out. The bottom section here is probably the most important. You should have one here. This is why people buy 3D printing. Faster time to market, increased workflow efficiency. Again, there's no tooling set up. You hit a button and it spits it out. Security of intellectual property. Sorry, I missed that one. I mean, it's not one to be missed. This is huge. Security of intellectual property, obviously with military secret textbooks. Yes, it's huge. It's becoming... We're in a stage right now where there are service bureaus popping up that don't have any machines. Zero. So guess where their parts are getting made?
China.
Exactly. So really, Boeing? You're sending it to that service bureau because it's cheaper, but I know for a fact they don't have any machines. Where do you think their parts are going? And then the Boeing engineers sit there for a while. Wait, they're sending it to China? You should probably ask. It's happening all over the place right now. That's kind of the internet business model. Service bureaus today, being the mom and pop local service bureau is important because the machine is there. The NDA is with them. The security is with them. They're not going to send your parts out and have them show up someplace else. I've had it happen to me recently. It's more humorous for me, but it's very illustrative. I did a model for a school. It's their logo, whatever. Made it for them, printed it at a show we were doing for them. This was 4 years ago. This year, I was on an appointment, and they had not my printers, but somebody else's, and lo and behold, there's my model sitting on their printer. Where'd you get that? Say, look, came with the printers. Really? My model, I made 4 years ago over here for this printer, is now coming with that printer.
You did a good job.
What is a nice mom? It's aerospace. You pay attention because they love the low bid. Who's going to do it the cheapest? Well, are you worried about security and intellectual property, right? Who's going to get the files? Where is it going? And maybe bet that new vendor a little bit stronger. I don't care if they sign an NDA. They sign it with China. That NDA means nothing.
Well, ITAR plays a very large piece of that.
Yes,
in this world.
Look, right. And, well, Boeing's sloppy. No one in here is with Boeing, right? They've given me parts. So
don't
be sure.
I'll show them that because they use stuff all the time. Our entire commitments.
I could show them parts that they sent me that I have
you as good
commitments on at all. Really? You guys need to rein in your engineers. Because they have no business doing that. I consider it a threat to our security. That stuff is out there. Yeah. So
Intellectual property is bigger and bigger and bigger every day. People have machines now all over the place. The machines are getting more and more capable. There's China just introduced a low-cost metal printer. You know, if you have bone parts, you can make bone parts.
I know we're out of time, but I do want you to touch on, I see raw material open source. Can you expand on what you mean by open source and the importance of the pottery and all that?
Yeah. So the 300 machine, the Phoenix-based systems, that's... oops. Sorry. One button. So we have the ProX 300. ProX 320 is actually not on here because it's new as of this year. Although the machine's not new, just new to my portfolio. The 300 is open source. The Phoenix Systems machine, it's compacted. So if you can buy powderized metal of whatever kind, in theory, you can run it on this machine. So the laser is tunable, the parameters are tunable, what powder it is and whether it works or not. You know, again, if you have experience in sintering, you will know which powders work better than others. You know, theoretically, you can put any of those on this machine. You have to have the source for the metals, but that's what the open source is. This machine is the one that that GE, you know, wanted. They bought a whole bunch of these because they wanted to experiment with metals.
So what that tells me then is the machines that are not open source, that means we have to buy the raw metal powders from a specific printer manufacturer.
Yeah, but metals are largely open source. You know, you can't, it's difficult to RFID tag powder, simply put. And the fact you're hitting it with a tuned laser, you know, if we give you the ability to tune a laser, and it's in there, and we train you on it, you're going to run days. It's tough to lock it down. We have proven materials through reputable sources, through ITAR compliance and everything else, you know, that we can put, you know, that's why you buy it from us. This material works from our source, and it's ITAR proven. If you want to go outside the box and use your own vendor, then, you know, we're not going to say no. We can't. You know, there's no way for us to lock it down. So it also goes through the inspection on the back end thing. So if we're telling you you have to buy the powder from the source, what's the job shop going to do? Find the cheapest supplier of that metal and throw it in the machine. You know, casting has been, you know, not only does the material matter, but the casting plaster matters. You know what? You know, we've seen it, especially when I work more with jewelry on that side of things. A huge disparity in what they use and where they get it from. It all affects the final product. So that's where inspection is going to be a huge contributor. The machines do what the machines do. If you go put junk in, junk out. Sooner or later. Yeah. Well, I'm going to stick around for a while. I know if you guys have to leave, you know, please feel free to do so. I do have one last spec you can grab on your way out. On the actual hero semester.
Oh, you did?
So that's about the current metal line. It also talks about our off-the-shelf materials in there. So, you know, if you need to, it's basically to make the transition into metal. We're not going to expect you to source a powdered metal. You may or may not have done that. You know, even traditional shops may not have done that.